Wow, this is ready. Hey guys.
Hi, can you hear me, Jeff?
Sure can.
Ah, good. Okay, I'm there now. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you, everybody, for joining today's call. This is an important subject that comes up quite a lot in our peer support rooms. So we wanted to start a little series of discussions to focus right in on challenges and opportunities in the workplace when it comes to, navigating work in view of our bipolar symptoms and that kind of thing. So, first of all, just a brief introduction for anyone who's not familiar with our club. My name's Monty. I'm the founder of the Bipolar Support Club here on Clubhouse. And Bipolar Support Club is a great resource. Our main purpose is to offer peer support. We're currently running 5 rooms per week for peer support. Each one is 2 hours long, and we have two on Tuesday, two on Thursday, and one on Saturday, these days. And we're continuing to add rooms as the needs of our membership grow. We're really pleased with the ongoing growth of our membership and the progress and successes we're having in the club. A lot of people are definitely giving us feedback about positive benefits of, participating in our rooms and sharing stories with each other, supporting each other, and learning from each other. So peer support is, it's a really fantastic resource. It's free to anyone who wants to join us here on Clubhouse worldwide. And so, if you know anyone who you think might benefit from our peer support discussions, please refer them to our club. I'm joined here today by Jeff, who is one of our facilitators in peer support. He's also a big advocate for bipolar. He does a lot of work in the community, has his own channels called The Bipolarist. And, it's a lot to do with his motivating us to have this series in the first place. So I want to thank Jeff for the initiative of this and for being here. And I'm going to turn it over to you to start the discussion.
Hey, thanks, Monty. And once again, thanks for letting me come aboard the community. I'm a new facilitator here at Bipolar Support Club, and I've really enjoyed participating and being a support for others, but just receiving the support from the community. So glad to be here. I know Monty mentioned that I talk a lot about mental health and bipolar disorder and my experience and identity with this condition. On my channels, but also in some podcast interviews and other rooms on Clubhouse. And one of the topics that comes up quite often is the struggles and some of the successes that we have in the bipolar community when it comes to employment. In my experience, I've had issues with accommodations and the hiring process and just getting along with colleagues and seeking the support that I might need or finding the right kind of work that's good for me, that's well suited for my neurotype and my skill set and the things I'm drawn to. So we wanted to host this first session in the series on working while bipolar and invited everyone in our we tried to invite everybody in our Clubhouse rooms over the past couple of days. I hope you guys heard us talk about this and in last week as well. Just to share some of your stories. We want to hear from the community so that we can know what best resources and speakers we can source to help us down the road in this series on working in this condition. So I'm going to actually ask those who've stepped on the stage. Let's see. I think we have you in order now. I'm going to pull it a refresh. Yeah. And perhaps we can set this is going to be an hour room, I believe. So if we can set a brief limit to so that we can hear from as many people as possible. What's been your experience? What's been a struggle of yours? And what do you think would help us or help you and help others in the bipolar community when it comes to work and fulfillment and providing for yourself and your family? If you have a story, come on up to the stage.
Thanks, Jeff. I've turned on the hand raising. Anyone, we really want to include your thoughts and experiences in this discussion. And while we're waiting for people to join, maybe I can start. So 20 years ago, I was my background, my professional background has to do with high tech R&D, research and development. I was a manager of lots of different kinds of software teams. And sometimes it was a very stressful type of work. And in 2001, after about 15 years of doing this kind of work, I was in a particularly stressful situation at work. And it was the first time that my symptoms really manifested into an episode. And so I had an episode. It was at work. I ended up getting hospitalized. It was a 30-day hospitalization, which has a pretty big impact on your work. And the result of that was really the end of my job in management, not just at the company I was at the time, it was Intel Corporation, but in the industry in general, because senior management doesn't really have much tolerance for senior managers that struggle with mental health disorders. And so pretty much got blackballed in the industry and had to switch my career focus to my own self-employment. I did a number of startup companies. I worked for other startup companies and basically transitioned into smaller for-profit businesses. And it was pretty impactful, and it was pretty hard to stomach. And for the next 20 years, I struggled a lot with the diagnosis and not so much with the symptoms themselves. A small handful of days and weeks over 20 years, I had was episodic, but the rest of the time I was fine. I was productive. I was mostly healthy. And yet the stigma of my condition really interfered with a lot of my work opportunities. And that was pretty frustrating. So,
Steve,
just
I've
that's
lost
kind
you.
of,
I'm not sure if
yeah,
you're
go ahead.
hearing yourself or not.
Sorry, Jeff, I didn't catch that.
Am I the only one having audio issues?
Oh, did I, am I in the Matrix? Okay, oh, maybe Jeff's in the Matrix. Okay, well, hopefully you guys heard some of that anyway.
I heard all of it, Monty. You sound just fine.
Oh, good. Okay, thanks, Matthew. So yeah, that's my little share for what, working with bipolar was like for me. It was pretty devastating. And although, I mean, I can't really fault Intel too much. They did handle it, as far as my own employment goes, pretty well. They created another position for me in the marketing department. I had more than a year and a half of, working in that space while I was kind of figuring out next steps and that kind of thing. So I was sort of blackballed from being a senior manager in R&D, but they still treated me pretty decently. And so I got no complaints about the company. But it did, the stigma and the diagnosis really for the next 20 years presented a significant obstacle for me. So that's my share, and welcome any feedback on that. And also, anyone wants to jump in with their share, Matthew or Jennifer or Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, it's crazy, Monty. Got so much in common with you, brother. Working in the R&D space too. I'm glad that you were able to find other ways to survive and provide for yourself and others. I know that it's hard. It's making that switch. It's like your passion might be something in R&D and innovation, and now you've got to go to marketing. And while it's related, and you get to work with, some of the same technologies, having to downshift into the startup world or small business world, comes with a different set of challenges and interests, but. I know what it's like to work on these big, complex problems and these huge teams, and that's really something I was drawn to too. So I'm glad that you got through, that you've provided this resource to us. I think this is probably more important work, to be honest, but I'm grateful for you here.
Yeah, thanks. I do feel great about the work that I'm doing now. It's markedly different than software engineering, and it's really welcome. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really proud of our team and the resource we've created for our members.
Matthew, do you have something?
Monty, your story certainly resonates with me as well. Now, I've only been diagnosed for, I don't know, maybe the last 5 years, I guess, but I've been dealing with this since I was about 16, and it really manifested itself about 10, 12 years ago, I guess. And it has been the last 10, 12 years has just been a massive struggle for me. I've had situations where I've disclosed to managers, and I've been on a contract at the time and disclosed, hey, look, when I got diagnosed, I've just been diagnosed with this. I'm trying to figure it out. I'll let you know what I need, but I wanted to be upfront with you. And I've had situations where I've done that, and all of a sudden, mysteriously, there's no work for me to do anymore, and so they're going to end my contract early. I had a situation where in my last full-time job, so for me, I've worked in HR my whole career, and like you, Monty, I've been in management positions. My last management position that I was in, I started becoming episodic, and I went to my manager and I said, look, like we're short staffed, but this is what's going on with me. I am in a rough place right now. I'm trying to get my meds sorted. That's going to take some time, and I just need you to support me through this. Like this, I'm going to do the best I can, but it's not going to be perfect because of what I'm going through. And unfortunately, they decided to, they told me all the right things of, oh yes, we'll support you, no problem. And I ended up getting terminated, and when I and they said, well, this project wasn't done. And I said to them, like, well, you can see what I was working on with it, but I also made you very aware that during this timeline for this project, I was struggling mightily, and I would have been off if we had had the staff that would have allowed me to do that. But I did the best I could. I ended up getting a settlement out of the deal, but it's been for me too. It's been employment's been an off and on thing where I've started jobs and fallen apart, and I think the toughest part for me is, I had a conversation with my wife recently, and I've been lucky enough that I've had her to support me through all of this. And like you, Monty, I've tried to start my own thing, and unfortunately, that hasn't taken off. And the conversation we had fairly recently was, I'd like to look at, investing in something. And she said to me, well, I'm not comfortable doing any kind of bigger investment, whether it's real estate or whatever, until you can show me that you can hold a job for like 5 years. And that reality, I know she's right, but that kind of dose of reality that, yeah, the last 12 years I haven't been able to do that. I seem to manage to maybe hold a job for 2 years, and then something happens and I either self-destruct or I disclose and management immediately turfs me. One of those two things. And so that's been kind of tough to take. I can't tell you, Monty, how grateful I am for the opportunity to be a facilitator, because just the opportunity to help out in an organization like this where everybody understands the struggles that come with this disorder. It just makes me feel so good. So, that's my story. And I, again, too, just want to say thank you for the opportunity you've given me.
Yeah, man, for sure. It's great having you on the team. I really appreciate it. And we do resonate, I mean, with similar impacts of this in the workplace. Jeff?
Yeah, Matthew, again, like so much in common. I've been through some of the similar struggles, or some similar struggles to yours, including disclosing and, well, including just being in management, trying to be a leader, which I think I'm prone toward. And I've been through leadership training a lot and in college and so on. They invested a lot of money in me to do this sort of stuff, and something I was recognized for in school. But then getting into the workforce and disclosing or just being a little bit different in the leadership role, having a different approach, makes others uncomfortable, and it's like they really I have experience where people don't want or colleagues and companies seem not to want someone with a disability like ours to be making decisions. And so I empathize with you and some of your experiences there for sure. It's so frustrating to be so like to be passionate about the role that you're in or the work that you get to do, and then to have that taken from you because of something that you can't control or something that wasn't a decision you made, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I think it's like totally frustrating. And part of what's frustrating is the assumption that all of a sudden you're unable to function. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's only the fear and stigma of it that causes that reaction among management who isn't really very plugged into, the reality of things. I'd like to mention, I wrote it in the chat as well, but if anyone would like to visit the pinned link at the top of the page, we created a form on that page where you can submit to us any inputs that you have on this topic, especially specific aspects of this topic that you'd like to learn more about, specific experts that you'd like to hear from, because we're going to have follow-on sessions in this area, and we'd like it to, address the interests and the needs of our of our members. So please check that out. And maybe let's go to Jennifer and see
Just
what your
quickly,
thoughts. Oh, go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead, or Matthew. Go ahead.
I just had one other thing I wanted to add quickly too that I've tried. I even have tried disclosing this in the interview process. I had a large HR consulting firm that I did this with, and I went through four rounds of interviews, and for three of those, I had everybody saying, "This is great. You know, you're going to add so much diversity to our staff." And then I get in with the CEO, and he was just obsessed with, well, how's this going to affect our clients? And I'm telling him, well, if I don't tell them, they're not going to know. I might just need some extra time to get through some projects. And they ended up saying, oh, well, we need somebody with more IT experience. So, you know, and of course, we all know what that means. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if any organization should have the stomach for tolerating our strengths along with our weaknesses, you'd think it would be an HR organization. That really
sucks.
You
would think that, but that's not really the case.
Yeah, 100. And Jennifer, I'll get you on here soon. I wanted to respond to one more thing Matthew said. You mentioned trying to start your own thing. And I wanted to call attention to some research, and particularly a doctor I met through the Stanford Neurodiversity Summit during the pandemic. His name is Michael A. Freeman, and you can check his stuff out at michaelafreemanmd.com. And he has a paper he wrote and published called "Are Entrepreneurs Touched with Fire?" He in that paper discusses like a very high prevalence of folks with mental health diagnoses, specifically bipolar disorder. Apparently, makes you know, there's a having bipolar diagnosis makes you 10 times more likely to work at a startup as a founder or something like this. And as well as anxiety and ADHD are also very common in the startup and founder community. So you're not alone there. I know I've started something several times and even raised venture capital and exited. And it's something that I've actually really enjoyed doing. It's really similar to working in innovation and research and development. But it comes with a lot of risk, you know? And so it's also not as stable just because of how much work you have to do and how... you know, the income comes in, what is it, you know, peaks and valleys or feast or famine, as they say, when you're working and running an agency. So that really resonated with me as well. Jennifer, why don't you share? And if anyone else wants to come on up, I also wanted to call out, if you have not made it to the workforce yet, but you are still in school, we'd love to hear some of those stories as well, because working in school is a similar activity, not just because you're not diagnosed yet, not in the workforce, doesn't mean you're not, you know, trying to hustle too. So come on up, guys.
Just one comment, Jeff, on what you just said, and then we'll go to Jennifer. It makes sense to me that there's a higher than average proportion of CEOs and entrepreneurs that happen to also live with bipolar disorder. I feel like, you know, myself and lots of others that I've talked to in our member community, we have certain abilities that it's not common to everybody with bipolar, but many of us have the ability to connect dots, to ask questions that are the difficult questions that other people didn't think of, and to see the opportunities across different people and things. Like sometimes sales and marketing can't talk to engineering because they don't speak the same language. But I always found that if I could speak both, I could act as an interpreter between them. And this ability to connect dots, I think, goes hand in hand with entrepreneurialism and that kind of thing. So it makes sense to me that there's a more than average number of folks in the leadership and entrepreneurial community that that live with bipolar.
Jennifer, sure, if you invite you up.
Hey, everybody. So before and after diagnosis are two different kind of journeys that I had with work. before diagnosis, or before, let's just say, before I started taking it seriously, because 3 years ago is when I had psychosis and I have remained to be medicated, you know? Before that, I wasn't. And I was a hairdresser. That's what I did as soon as I got out of high school. And I did that for a while. And I tell you, it's not the best environment to be in if you're not medicated. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of fights. There's a lot of petty individuals. And they're all competing with each other. And I was, you know, I didn't know what was going on with me at the time. I was very emotional. I was crying a lot at work. I was openly mocked for crying, which made it worse. I felt extremely alone. At those times, I never got fired for being, you know, for crying or things like that. It was mainly for being late. And I went through a few salons because I was late. And honestly, deep down, I guess, I was struggling so hard to be at work every day, not knowing what was going on with me. I just didn't put in the extra effort to be there on time. You know, if you really love your job, if you really like going where you're going, you know, you're going to be on time. That's how I look at it. So after that, I really wanted to stay away from the spa, you know, salon setting. But I went back to school for aesthetics, which is another spa salon setting. And I think I'm just better in school. You know, I love it and I never had problems. But anyway, after that, I couldn't find a job really with my aesthetics license. There wasn't much work. So I focused on my photography, which was therapy for me, which was great. And I started becoming a professional at it and got paid doing it. And I've been doing that for like 7 years now, on and off, because it's not consistent money. So I did a lot of part-time work as well with it. Now, I knew I was bipolar, you know, this was a little bit before the psychosis, but, you know, I was taking it more seriously because it was getting worse. But luckily enough, my part-time work, my boss was my best friend. So if I had little rants, rages at work or didn't want to come in, he was just very supportive. You know, I was really lucky in that way. He would say, it's okay if you're 10 minutes late, or, you know, it's okay, Jenny, you can make it through today. And that really helps. It helps so much when you're able to have that. And so that job went fine. I left it to focus on my photography. Still wasn't making consistent enough money. Got another part-time. And turns out it was my best friend was my boss again. So it was great because actually this was like 3 years ago, I went into psychosis and I was supposed to start the job while I was in the hospital. And I was like, oh God, great. What's going to happen? Is he going to be able to like keep me in the clear on this? Is he going to be able to still hire me? And I got out of the hospital, went to go see him. And he's like, of course I still have your job for you. I was like, oh, thank God. But, he ended up leaving. He ended up going to do another job. And so I had a new boss. And this year I've struggled a lot. I had a lot of moments. psychosis crept up on me this year too. And it was all with the new boss. And I told her as soon as she started working there, you know, because I thought, you know, Chris, you know, my best friend, my boss, you know, he knew about this. I'm kind of getting used to, like, within a work setting, like, letting my superior know about what's up, what's going on. Because it just, it helps, you know, but it also helped that it was a friend at first, right? So I was taking a gamble with her. But she's younger, so I think she was more open-minded, you know. And plus, I was already hired, so that's a plus. But she's been really great this year. I mean, I had an episode at work, y'all. I went to the bathroom and I literally heard, I had a auditory hallucination. It freaked me out badly. I came running out of the bathroom and came to her. I told her exactly what happened. She was like, it's okay. You need to go home. Like, she didn't fire me or anything. And she's been so supportive since. And the past 3 weeks that I was only doing one day a week recently. Okay. I mean, that's the decline that I've had this year. I wouldn't say that I'm worse all over. I would say I've been focusing a lot on my self-care, and that's taken up a lot of my time. So I'm just not as focused on work right now. But I've missed the days that I was scheduled for, and she still has yet to fire me. She has kept me on the schedule and still been supportive and still been understanding of the fact that I just can't focus on that right now. She's keeping me on this. I'm still on there, and if usually I will tell her, okay, I'm good, I can work, and she'll be like, no, Jenny, you should take some more time away. I mean, it's like, wow, it's amazing that somebody you don't know can be so supportive in that way and that understanding. So basically, I'm just focusing on my, getting better and my self-care and my working out and all this and that. But I have talked to my partner, and I do eventually want to get back into photography, and I want to have an at-home studio. Now, you have to have a lot of self-discipline for that. And right now, that's what I'm working on, and that's just gonna be a whole nother journey. Maybe I can come back and speak upon that, because, yeah, I've been doing it for a while, but really starting a business and really working from home, having your own place at your home is just a whole nother level. So yeah, hopefully that'll be good, and I can come back and talk to y'all about that. But in Georgia, they can fire you for anything here. They can fire you for anything here, and they don't have to justify it. It's not so great, but I just think it's better to definitely be upfront and honest with your employer. Maybe not at the interview, maybe after the interview. I don't know. It's a gamble, I know, but I think getting hired first is key.
Yeah.
It's not like you're lying about it. It's just like you just want to have the same the level playing field as everyone else,
Yeah.
when it comes
Same
to getting a
opportunities,
job.
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Jennifer, I have so much in common with your share too. I mean, it's just crazy. These are all the same experiences. We're all on in this fight together. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, first off, that you're having these symptoms and the auditory hallucinations. I haven't dealt too much too often with those or and the visuals, but it's intense, and it's very distracting. Let alone for, for coping and just everyday life. But to be able to work through that, that would be very difficult. So, yeah, I'm sorry you're going through that, and I hope that you don't still have those symptoms that often, because that would be very disabling. I can see how that's distracting, and man.
No, I'm
And that
doing
brings
really
us
great. I haven't had any
good.
symptoms like that in several months now, so it's been good.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. It raises a couple interesting questions though about what symptoms or how severe does a condition or disability have to be, before it makes it such that you are you might not be a good fit, or it might not be healthy for you to have a certain role. I think about that a lot, and I wonder if being a leader like I've been working in like app teams and leading designers and engineers, am I poorly suited for this, or is it really just stigma? And Monty, I think you said something too about how it's usually stigma and fear that prevents us from rising to leadership positions in these organizations. And then that's where I get at this, where it's like, I don't know if I have a condition as much as it's just my identity. And if it's my identity, then how can they get away with treating us differently for that reason? So I'm with Jennifer. I tell them up front, this is who I am. I told a health insurance company I worked for just the same in the interview. It's why I got hired, I think, but also why I got fired.
Well, I mean, this question of when and whether to disclose to your employer, I think has lots of different answers for lots of different people. And my tendency is to similar to Jennifer and to you, Jeff, where, sunlight is good. But in most places, there's no obligation to disclose too early, especially if it could jeopardize your opportunities and that kind of thing. So I think due care is important. I think especially if you're at a period in your life where you might anticipate needing some accommodations one way or another, different flexibilities about work hours or that kind of thing, then that could affect your need to disclose. And I've also heard stories where if you're disclosing to the right people, whether it's your manager or someone in HR or even just a colleague, that it's not all a bad story of risk for the employer, because we have our upsides as well. We have our ability to perform at increased levels of performance and increased levels of creativity when our mood is like a little on the elevated side. And so to me, that's a benefit that can easily outweigh the cost of some of the struggles and some of the downside that we have where we may need accommodations and that kind of thing. So that's what it made me think of. Thanks for sharing, Jennifer. Any other comments on that or before we go to Adele? Okay, welcome, Adele. Thanks for coming up. What are your thoughts on this so far?
Such an interesting topic. I'm really glad you guys are doing this. I'm currently unemployed. I have been unemployed since 2021 January, and I'm going through the process of getting on disability. But that is because I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 13 years ago, and I was able to, after my first really major episode, I flew under the radar with hypomania for like 10 years. And it was really, well, no, probably it was 9 years. And then I had my first major depressive episode. You know, I've always leaned towards mania. And that depressive episode happened while I was at a job and literally, you know, couldn't get out of bed, like had a hard time for several months even functioning. They really kind of let me do my own thing, but it was definitely an excuse to get rid of me, and they should have. I was, you know, I was not able to perform my job at that time. But I've had jobs in this 13 years here where I actually was incredibly productive. I took a company from the very last, you know, store in the company to top 10, and I did it in 6 months. And it was during I developed a program to retrain people, and they were going to send me to New York City with it, and it was like all set to go. But I feel like I wasn't afforded those opportunities because I was bipolar, and then I was let go of shortly after. And I've had several times where I've been in jobs where I felt like I should have been promoted, and they weren't promoting me. And I've had like three or four instances. And I feel like it was because I'm bipolar and wasn't really affecting my work. You know, I'm just naturally a manager. So you know, I wasn't like even applying for jobs that were management positions. These were positions that once I got into a job, you know, after a couple weeks, they were like, we're going to move you into management. Happens to me every single time. It's part of our personality. And I think we're good managers. You know, I've been a bad manager before, and I learned my lessons from being a bad manager. But once you've learned those lessons and you go, I think we're incredibly empathetic people. I think we're really good to our workers. But you get into catty women, and you know, I'm listening to Jennifer talk about the salon and how catty it can be in the salon. I think that, you know, I think you deal with that with women as you move up in the world too. And you give them a reason for why you may not be able to, you give them a reason, a reason for why you may not be the best person for the job, and they're your biggest critics. And I think that's so frustrating. So I'm currently back in school. I already have a degree. I'm a dietetics major. I did not get my master's in it, though, so I am not a practicing dietitian. But I am a nutritionist, and I'm actually going back to school. I think what I'll end up doing is radiology tech so that I can be in a hospital setting. I think hospitals are probably the most understanding of our situation, and I think that they'll work with me the best. So I also think it'll be really low stress. But I hate that because I am actually kind of a kick-ass manager, and it's just not something I'm going to be able to do forever. Not because of me, but I do think because of the stigma. That's all.
Yeah. Well, you know, Adele, that's quite the mic drop at the end there. I hope we're fighting the stigma. And I mean, it seems like we are. We're making progress. And those of us that are, you know, that are comfortable disclosing and sharing that we have a disability, something I want to comment on there. But that we are bipolar. You know, I hope that the sacrifice of my identity is helping folks get through the door behind me. And I'm happy to blaze the trail, but it doesn't come without flack.
You know, I do think the software companies are probably mm-hmm. the most progressive as far as dealing with mental health. Mm. I really wanted to try and get a job with Salesforce. I sent them several applications when I was manic. I don't know if they're ever going to hire me now because of those, but I do think a company like that would be very emboldened by someone like us.
Adele, I'm sorry to differ with you. I had pretty much 35 years of a career in software, and at least in my experiences, it's not as accommodating as you might think. And it's interesting that you mentioned Salesforce, because in 2014, I think it was, I went ahead and got certified in a couple of different Salesforce certifications, and I started a consulting firm, which went really well for a few years. But when I had a break, there was no accommodation. I got dropped. Not only did the clients that I worked for go right back to Salesforce and ask for new consultants, but I was unable to get work after that episode. It was really frustrating, and I didn't find much room for space.
Yeah, I echo what Monty said. I've had a career in software development and product ownership or product management, which is it's kind of like the cat herder or quarterback of a software team or a product team. And I've encountered similar stigma. I've requested the support, you know, accommodations. Specifically, I wanted to get a job coach that I thought would be very helpful for not just interpreting what might be affecting my work as a product owner that had to do with my bipolar disorder, but also to help my teammates and the organization understand how someone with this condition or experience or identity might do the job differently. I thought it would be a wonderful resource for the organizations that I was working at, a Fortune 50 company on the East Coast, and the largest private employer in Virginia, I'll say it that way, to really make an investment in someone that might be able to help shift the stigma and teach everybody how to be inclusive. So that wasn't the case. I think when you ask for a job coach, I think that they're thinking that you're someone that doesn't know how to do the work, or who you might need. You're probably in a role that's not as high skill. And for that reason, you need to have a chaperone. And I think that was the misinterpretation of why I was asking for a job coach at that time. So, I'd be curious to hear what specific accommodations folks have asked for. And I did want to call out that, at least in the United States, when you do request an accommodation from work, you don't have to disclose your medical condition. Some of us are comfortable speaking as that we are bipolar or that we have bipolar disorder and embracing that as a shield and a sword, perhaps, but it doesn't need to be the case. When you request accommodations, you don't have to do so formally. You can do so formally and go through all the certifications and get your doctor to really ask for what you two think you need to be successful. But ultimately, the organization, the company, and yourself have to participate in what they call an interactive process, where you guys both determine, what compromises can be made, and I don't know why companies are making compromises, like they can't afford to. And then, what would be most helpful? And I wanted to make sure that people understand this because it seemed to have been misunderstood at this Fortune 50 that I worked at. But accommodations are to be considered on a case-by-case basis. Just because someone else gets noise cancellation headphones or gets to sit near the window or elevator so they or bathrooms so they can get to the bathroom quickly, or someone just because someone gets to work from home doesn't mean that you will too, even with the exact same disability. So I thought that was really interesting, and I wanted to throw back to what something Jennifer said too about the auditory hallucinations. I won't tell it my whole story because I've done it so much, but way back when I was getting managed out of this company as a financial tech company, I was listening to a lot of hip hop and I was starting to think that I was in some of these songs. And one of my favorite artists, stay with me, is Big Punisher. So as I got managed out of this particular company, I decided I'd create an alter ego and go by Capital Punisher to sort of give it back to these people that I really enjoyed working with, but didn't appreciate the stigma and flack that they gave me back. In this particular company, I also found out, which I thought was very strange, for a federal contractor, Fortune 50 company, an enterprise, one of the largest employers here on the East Coast. I asked for help, and I did all the things. And the head of accommodations, the person that makes decisions for all like 30, now 50,000 people at this company, couldn't believe what she was told when she found out why my request for a job coach was denied. She told me on their private cell phone after hours that the reason why they wouldn't give me a job coach was because they didn't want to have to give other associates with neurocognitive disorders a job coach in the future. And a very, simple read of the American with Disabilities Act will tell you that the accommodations are to be considered on a case-by-case basis. There's no such thing as a precedent. So you really got to self-advocate.
Yeah, I don't get why that would be a precedent to worry about, man. Wow. Thanks for sharing that as well. Let's go to Nicole now, check in with you. What are your thoughts on this so far, Nicole? Nicole, are you there? The unmute is in the lower right of your screen.
If anyone else has something to share while Nicole gets back to her screen, please do join. And if you've got comments in the chat, did we see? Oh, Nicole said she'd like to pass. Okay, I got it. Well, I'm happy to share more of some of the things I've been through. There are a couple of things that I've heard others mention so far today, as well as in our other peer support rooms, about strengths. And as a big believer in the theory of neurodiversity and the movement, the social movement of neurodiversity, I do believe that people with different neurotypes are well suited for different roles in society and in the workforce. I've read stuff, I think it was Neurotribes, a book I think by Steve Silberman, one of the early parts of the what is it, the early tome on neurodiversity. He mentions, I think in there, or perhaps Judy Singer, the creator of the theory, talks about how people with anxiety might have been well suited for keeping track or being sentinels of the tribe as everyone slept. Or people with photographic memories or certain types of autism might have been the people that made the map and kept it in their minds for where the best fruit or where the best food might be in the forest. And likewise, I think people like us with the neurotype that we describe as bipolar might have been the ones that were the first to go. I think what Adele said about us being empathetic, and I think what I've seen with the community here and others embracing vulnerability, I could see myself way back in the day as a tribesman, leading the charge, you know, or being the first to jump. Maybe because of the impulsivity or the adrenaline rush of going first. But I think that's something that we do, you know, we jump, we go first, we lead the way. And so, you know, in my experience working at in innovation, I have been first. I've been first quite often. In fact, I've been fortunate to work at this Fortune 50 that patented four of my inventions. And so it was my only goal professionally to become an inventor. I am now. And to be an inventor, you've got to see something that others don't. You have to connect dots and read trends and see what is possible from what exists today. I've always been a futurist, and so being able to come up with something that no one else was able to do, to be, you know, a certified original and be down in the record books, was something I was really proud of and still am. And that's something I think I'd love to build a program for others to participate in as well. So, you know, there's things that I think that we might be able to do that others don't do well. And I almost wonder if, well, you don't want us in leadership positions. How about we come up with the ideas and the agenda, and the rest of you can go implement them? It's kind of the way I take about
Yeah.
it now.
Awesome. I love that. I'm going to try and find a link. There's an organization that I know of in the world of recruitment and job hunting, headhunting and job placement and that kind of thing. And they focus specifically on the neurodiverse population that we're part of. And I think, like what you're hinting at, they're able to promote the extra strengths and benefits that come along with how we are, how we function. And so it's a nice side of the coin to look at from time to time, is to actually have some pride about exceptionalism and about some of our unique strengths, and not all just focus on accommodations and drawbacks and weaknesses and that kind of thing. So thanks for that.
Yeah. I dropped a link to one too. I worked with I believe her name was Rebecca Beam at Zavicon. Oticon was an organization I believe she started too, which was specifically for the autist community, to help them get employment and find destinations that were inclusive of people with neurodivergence. So that was one that I came across. I met the folks from the Profound Incubator at the first Stanford Neurodiversity Summit. And the Profound Incubator is a incubator program in Australia, which is actually really vanguard when it comes to mental health and neurodiversity, way ahead of us in the US. The Profound Incubator is a place where people with neurotypes that are different, or some sort of divergence or disability, are able to take an idea, work through it with someone like myself or Monty, or a designer even, and take it to market. You know, I think that was a really good idea. It was actually one that I had myself when I was getting managed out. I wanted to build an innovation program for the neurodivergent. So perhaps I'll get to that one day. But it's something I think we're really well suited for, is coming up with the idea and going first. So does anyone else want to come up to the stage? I think we've got about 7 minutes left. I've got more stories, but I'd like to hear from you. In that case, I mentioned Michael Freeman, Dr. Michael Freeman, and I put a link to his blog, what is his website in the chat. He's also, I think, the first person interviewed on the Stigma podcast. And so Stigma was a podcast that was, I think it's perhaps dormant right now, but it was led by a guy named Stephen Hayes, who is the a venture capitalist at a group he founded called What If Ventures. And What If Ventures, and this gentleman, Stephen, has bipolar disorder and deals with addiction as well. So I'll just link to you guys to his venture capitalist fund. What If Ventures invests exclusively in mental health startups. So I thought, and I've thought about this for some time, reaching out to Stephen. He's active on Twitter, to see if I might bring some of my solutions to market through his program. I would encourage any and all of you with ideas in tech and software and services, to just maybe, see what you can come up with. I mean, there's people throw money at entrepreneurs all the time, and it, you know, given how creative we are, we're some of the world's most creative people. We can't help but be. We might as well see if we can get some solutions for ourselves that we understand inherently better than the professionals built to help us. So, always
Yeah.
encourage that.
Love that. I love that. I found the website that I was thinking of. I'm actually inviting James Fellows, one of the guys that's involved in creating this recruitment site, to come and speak to us, and maybe as part of this series of discussions on working while bipolar. But the name of the website is bridgeofhope.careers. I put it in the chat, and it's all about inclusive recruitment. Really cool stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm dropping that link to the Stigma podcast episode with Dr. Freeman too. I spoke with Dr. Freeman at that summit. Also, we had a one-off chat, and man, it's interesting. There are people out there that are fans of us. You know, I don't think he deals with the same condition. I think it's just a psychologist who does, you know, work with this community. But we have fans out there, guys, and we don't have to wait till
Go
we're
figure.
gone to be appreciated. Imagine, you know,
Go
imagine.
figure. That's awesome. Yeah, I love that. There's pride. There's pride that should be enjoyed
And there ought to be.
among us. Yeah. Matthew,
I know
you
we.
were going to say something?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say thanks for the ideas to both of you, and this thought of like our creativity and entrepreneur connection. Like the business I've tried to start. I mean, I haven't given up on it, but you know, need to have an income at the same time. Is I tried to focus on training businesses on accommodating specifically staff that have mental health challenges, and you know, basically giving them the tools to work through those situations. And I've had a couple of people kick the tires, but just nobody jumping on board yet. But I do really love some of the ideas that have been kicked around here today. So thanks everyone for sharing.
Yeah, Matthew, that reminds me, I met another lady in the HR space like you, and at an organization called For All Abilities. I'll drop a link to her resource too. Man, so many resources, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to feature these on our website. But I'll reach out to some of those folks that I've mentioned, see if we can't get them on the channel for a future topic in this series. Does anyone else have a topic? You can feel free to mention it in the chat that you'd like to just talk about. I'm happy to keep rambling, man. I've been through some stuff, but of course, I'm here for you guys.
I think this has been a great call. It's been an hour. We've gathered some really good conversation and some good inputs. We've had a couple submissions on the website for people giving us ideas and input on that web page. So I encourage anyone else that would like to do that to go ahead and check that out. And I think we can pretty much wrap up today's room with the promise that this is just the first. We're going to have a few more calls specifically in this area of work, working while bipolar. It's a very important topic. It comes up a lot, and we want to do our best to try and, you know, bring good information to our members in this space. So, thank you everyone for coming, and feel free to unmic if you're on stage and say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hey, thanks for showing
Thanks,
up for us.
guys. Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day, evening, morning, wherever in the world you are, and we'll see you all again soon. Take care.